Continuing our discussion of Pidyon HaBen, which is, as we pointed out, not necessarily a once-in-a-lifetime mitzvah, because it goes by, it's the father's obligation to do it, to perform the Pidyon HaBen, but it goes purely by if it's the firstborn of the mother. So in theory, it's possible for a man to have more than one wife in certain communities at the same time, but in all communities over the course of a lifetime, it's certainly halachically possible to have more than one wife. So if you have if you have many wives and they all give birth to firstborn boys with all the criteria that we discussed last time, you know, that can't be preceded by over 40-day miscarriages, and it can't be preceded by, and it can't be a C-section or preceded by a C-section, then you could, in theory, perform many pidyone haben over the course of a lifetime. Again, mitzvah shin, tzad, yeah.
That's right. You said preceded by C-section. Okay.
So if the, right, but even if right after the C-section there is a firstborn, there's a boy born vaginally after the C-section, right immediately following the C-section, still
mean
the next child without a miscarriage intervening or anything. Yeah.
But then the boy is not the firstborn born. Period, though.
But that's a machlokes tanoim. It's a machlokes tanoim.
Okay.
If you add that, according to one Tana, if you have a child that was born by C-section, whether it's a boy or a girl, then the first child born vaginally, assuming again there were no miscarriages intervening, will be a pidyon haben, first, if it's a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's but we don't pass like that. We pass in that both that a C-section and the one that comes after a C-section are not subject to a pidyon haben. So you see these high C-section rates that you have in the U.S. today. So not only is it a medical issue, but the Rishayim are preventing the Jews from fulfilling the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. That they should not be reducing the number of C-sections, both for medical and halachic reasons. It's just interesting. So if it's, again, aside from the medical issues, so if it's a Kohen or a Bas Kohen or it's a girl, so you don't get Pidyon HaBen anyway. So you, not such a big deal if you have a C-section first. But if you have, it's going to be a boy and they're both Yisrael and both the mother and father are neither a Kohen nor a Levi. So then you should try to take extra care to make sure that you do not have a C-section so as to be able to fulfill the mitzvah Pidyon HaBen. So the question is, you know, there's this movement in Orthodox society nowadays that people think it's fun to try to, maybe even halakhically good too, to try to fulfill mitzvos that people will not necessarily encounter during their lifetime. Like, there's this, sometimes you see in the Jewish news about how someone fulfilled the mitzvah Pidyon Peter Chamor. Something unusual. So you have to buy a donkey.
Oh.
You have to be a first. Again, here's where a bechor comes into play regarding animals as well. It has to be pregnant for the first time. Again, it would have to be delivered naturally, and then you switch the donkey with sheep. So you switch. You do a switcheroo. So that's a rare mitzvah. You have to have something that fulfills all the conditions, and you have to own a donkey. Most Jews nowadays do not own donkeys. So people sometimes go out of their way to buy a donkey in order to fulfill this mitzvah. So you also have, people want to buy a small portion of land in Eretz Yisrael to fulfill the agricultural mitzvahs of Leket, Shicha, and Peah, that leave it part of the field for the poor. So in other words, you're not required to do that. There's certain mitzvahs that if you don't fulfill the criteria, you don't have to do it. If you don't own a house, you don't have to, or rent a house, whatever.
It's
that's
like
a derabana. You don't have to put a mezuzah. Some people like to put themselves into the obligation of fulfilling a mitzvah just so they have the opportunity to fulfill all the mitzvahs.
Just make the analogy that if a man wants to divorce his wife, let him give her a get. It doesn't mean you should run around looking for the opportunity to give somebody a get because it's a mitzvah to give a get. That's the absurdity to which you could take that donkey stuff.
Yes, but there are no downsides, except, again, maybe the purchase price of the donkey, but there are no downsides to fulfilling a mitzvah pidyon petar chamor. A couple is not supposed to. The Torah certainly does not want couples to get divorced. We're not planning to get divorced. No. If you get divorced, you have to get divorced by way of a get.
It's just that you can take anything. Good.
So most people don't go to these extremes to try to fulfill all the mitzvahs. That's why I remember, I think a couple times, Rav Schechter said in Shir, he said, when the first time my wife had a baby, it was a baby girl. So do I have to divorce her and marry someone else to try to get a pidyon haben? And then if she doesn't have a baby boy first, then I should divorce her and try to marry someone else. Keep going. Keep on going in order to try to have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of a pidyon haben. So the answer is no, obviously, that if the mitzvah comes your way, so you do it. But if the mitzvah doesn't come your way, then you simply do not do it.
I think there's a certain excitement about doing something.
I know.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
And to remember that such a thing exists. Right, there's something to it.
There's something to that. Obviously, it's a downside. Obviously, if your wife does not give birth first to a boy, so.
I'm talking about the chamor.
Oh, the chamor. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's fine.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. I don't know, but if you want, if that's your.
How could someone not? Everyone has to live somewhere, so how could you not have to put up a mezuzah ever?
Maybe you live on a park bench.
In a hotel. And you move every 30 days.
Right. Yeah. If you live in a hotel.
To put up the fence around your roof, if you don't have a flat roof or something like that.
Correct. That's also an example. And technically, like we were talking about recently, the mitzvah of tzitzis. If you don't have a four-corner garment, you don't have to wear tzitzis. But again, the minhag is in that situation. It's probably based on that idea that we try to put ourselves in the situation of trying to fulfill the mitzvah, even if we might technically be exempt from doing so.
It says in Kohelet, whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. What comes your way, do it. You don't have to go, it's cute, it's sweet, it's nice, the donkey thing and the sending away the mother bird but it can get to a point where it's a little crazy.
All right, so sending away the mother bird, that's also interesting because it says in the Pasuk, ki yikare kan tzipor lefanecha, when a nest of a bird will happen before you.
Yeah.
So the question is, it's a little bit funny. It's against the pasuk to try to go out of your way to fulfill the mitzvah of. And there are also a lot of details. So some people don't know all the details that if they. It's not just that if you
pigeon nest.
Yeah. So. Oh, fine. So continuing a mitzvah Shin Sadi Beis 392, Mishor Shea Mitzvah Kasavti Mashidati Beseder Bo El Paro Aseivav. In the mitzvah of kiddush bechoros, of treating with sanctity both human and animal firstborns. Again, if they fulfill the criteria, which is found in Parshas Bo, it's the first parsha of Tfilin, Kaddish Likol Bechor Petek Al Recham Yivnei Israel, that it says that there's something to be said for the fact that the first thing that comes your way, you're already giving to God. Again, you don't actually give the baby to the Beis HaMikdash if you have a firstborn boy. But to realize that there has to be some sort of exchange over here and that really it should be dedicated to God, but you're sort of redeeming it, then it indicates that everything that you do should really have a focus on God. Yeah.
Now, Bris Milah, the eighth day is Shabbos, we have the Bris Milah on Shabbos.
Right.
But for Pidyon HaBen, we don't have the 30th day is on Shabbos.
Correct. So the Pidyon HaBen does not. It's not as restricted to that day as Bris Milah. Obviously, if you don't do a Bris on the eighth day, you can do it for any time for the rest of the person's life. But there's much more of a focus that a Bris has to be done on the correct day than there is for Pidyon HaBen. Again, you don't unnecessarily delay a Pidyon HaBen either, but when the 31st day of a Bechor's life falls on Shabbos, you do not perform the Pidyon HaBen on Shabbos, which the Gemara doesn't discuss explicitly, but the Rishonim explained that it's like a transaction.
Uh-huh.
That you're not doing a transaction on Shabbos. Exactly. But the problem is that some people ask the question that you don't need to make the Pidyon HaBen with money. You can do it with an object of monetary value. So if you take, say, a fancy suit, you go to the store and you buy a fancy suit. Even a not-so-fancy suit is probably more money than the Pidyon HaBen. But whatever. So you take a suit, you say to the Kohen here, take the suit and I'm redeeming my son through this suit. So that should be permissible on Shabbos. There's no reason. It doesn't involve handling money. But it still looks too much like a...
Giving gifts and stuff. Because it's all business. You give it to someone before Shabbos.
Right, so giving gifts, the prohibition of giving gifts is, yes, that's nohug, but it's not 100% clear what the parameters of that are. In fact, the Mishnah says that on Yontif, you're allowed to give gifts to someone even if it's not... even if it's necessary for some point over Yontif. So that there's an extra chiddush over there, that even though on Yontif there's really a prohibition of hotzah, of carrying an object that's not needed for that very day. You're only allowed to carry something Yontif that's needed for that very day, according to many shittas. So nevertheless, according to those the shittas that hold that way, which is really how we hold, then the chiddush is that you're allowed to bring someone a gift on Yontif, even if you know that the person will not bring, will not... use that item on Yontif, because the very act of giving a gift is Simchas Yontif.
Okay.
If you bring someone, you know, something that, you know, just a random present that's not to be used on Yontif. So yeah, so this question again, maybe you're makna to them before Yontif, or maybe you ask them not to acquire possession till after Yontif. I mean, there are definitely ways around. To hear that Cohen would have to acquire possession of the object on the.
You can wear the suit on Shabbos. That's
what?
You can wear the suit on Shabbos. Perfectly good for Shabbos. Yeah.
Correct. So, yeah. So, but nevertheless, the Rishonim explained that's still too much like a transaction, since it's usually done by money.
Sure.
So then you just, even though really it's a delaying the mitzvah, really you should be allowed to do it on Shabbos. Others explained that it's also because of the Suda, that you don't want to, it's sort of like Ein Marvin Simcha B'Simcha, even though, again, it's not a technical prohibition in this case, that we have a rule, for example, on Chol HaMoed that you're not allowed to get married. Because that the problem of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, you're not allowed to mix different types of happiness. On Yontif, you're supposed to be focused on Yontif Tikka happiness and not wedding Tikka happiness. So it's like this over here, that you want the Sudas on Shabbos to be focused on Shabbos and not on the Pinyon of Ben. Yeah.
Okay. But you know, the serving involved in a bris are deraisa, right? Whereas it's not just like transaction or something like that. It's old Rabban and different sobri, right? You can actually... You know,
yeah, but here the Torah tells you explicitly that has to be done on the eighth day, even if it's on Shabbos.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so again, so some also suggest that maybe this works according to, I think, the normative halachic approach, is you could give the money to the Kohen before the 30th day and say, I'm not letting you acquire this. I'm not giving this to you until the 30th day. Mm-hmm. On the 30th day, the Kohen acquires the money. So if the 30th day is on Shabbos, so then that should be allowed also, because you're giving it, you're not doing any active transaction at that time. But nevertheless, the Rishonim say that the minhag is not to make a pidyon haben on Shabbos, even though technically there should be ways that it should be permissible. And especially, again, when the giving of a gift is letzorech mitzvah, so then it's also permissible on Shabbos. So, again, it's a little bit we're a little bit searching for reasons over here why pidyon haben is not done on Shabbos, but lemaisa pidyon haben is not done on Shabbos or Yontif, and you wait until the next day, which, again, is not considered as big a deal as waiting until the ninth day or later to perform a bris. There's actually this question in terms of the Shabbos meals, so when Purim falls on Shabbos. So according to our current calendar, so the Purim that is except in Yerushalayim, except in walled cities, so a Purim cannot fall on Shabbos. But when our Purim falls on Friday, the Yerushalayim de Kippurim, the Purim de Mukvin, does fall on Shabbos. The question is when you should have the Purim Suda. So there are three different shittas. One shita is it should be on Friday when you lay in the Megillah, because you don't lay in the Megillah on Shabbos. You push it back a day. And the other shita is that the normative shita is that it should be on Sunday, which is very strange, because when do you have Purim observances after the 15th? It's a very odd thing, but the Yerushalmi does seem to say that the Purim Suda in such a situation would be on Sunday, especially because it says in the Pasuk Velo Yavor, that the Chazal Darshan that to mean that the Purim celebration is not supposed to be done after the 15th. Okay, it's a little bit odd, but the normative psak is that the Purim Suda in such a situation should be done on the on Sunday. Another sheet is hold, no, it should be done on Shabbos. What's the problem with having a Purim Suda on Shabbos? There's no problem. The only issue would potentially be this issue that you're mixing two different things, that the Purim Suda and the Shabbos Suda, should not be mixed together. The Purim Suda has to have a separate identity, which is similar to this idea that the Pidyon HaBen Suda should have a separate identity and not be mixed in with the Shabbos Suda. So regarding the Purim issue, so those who are extremely religious and the most machmir and the closest to God will get drunk all 3 days. You have a Suda on Friday where you get drunk, and a Suda on Shabbos where you get drunk, and a Suda on Sunday where you get drunk.
Well, maybe you Sunday because you don't want it to look as if you're not paying any attention to the status, the special status of the city.
Well, you say Al Hanisim on Shabbos. According to the normative Sack, the only way you tell that it's Shabbos is you lane. I'm sorry, it's Purim on that Shabbos is you lane Vayavo Amalek, the Torah portion of Purim on Shabbos morning is the Maftar, I guess. And then you, yeah, but that's the only Purim observance that's done on Shabbos, yeah.
And you say Al
Hanisim. You say Al Hanisim, yeah. The liturgical things are done on Shabbos, but the Megillah is laned on Friday, and Matonos Levyonim are given on Friday, because Matonos Levyonim are always given on the same day as the Megillah is read. And the question is, Mishloach Manos, the gifts, so the question is what day that should be done. So some say it should be done on Friday, and some say it should be done. It's connected to the Suda. Mishloach Manos really... The way the Rambam formulates, others formulate it, is that it's part of the Suda. In other words, what are the requirements of Purim Suda? You have to drink wine, you have to wash. Again, these are subject to discussion. I'm not saying we pass on all these things. You have to eat meat, you have to have a nice meal, and you have to send two portions to a friend. That's part of the requirements of the Purim Suda, is you have to give some of it to another person. So that's why a lot of Shittas hold that it should be done on Sunday, along with the Suda. And some say it should be done on Friday because they don't go so strictly with this idea that you have to give the Mishloach Manos exactly on the same day as the Suda. And again, if you hold that the Suda is supposed to be on Shabbos, so then you, in theory you could have Mishloach Manos on Shabbos. If you're all living in a courtyard, it's all an Erev, so you could give Mishloach Manos to someone on Shabbos. Yeah. Fine. Oh, so the Sefer Chinuch also says in Parshas Bo that part of the reason that the Torah is so fixated on the firstborns is also that we should remember the miracle that was done in Makas Bechoros, that God saved the Jewish firstborns from Makas Bechoros. Therefore, we acknowledge that by giving special religious attention to the firstborns. Midine ha-mitzvah, what are the halachas? Ma sh'amr zichronim levracha, she-mitzvahs ha-pidyon hu mishyesh lo shloshim yom v'mala, she-yotza miklal nefel. That the pidyon should be done after the baby has passed 30 days to make sure that it's not a miscarriage. I mean, there's no English word for this. We wouldn't term this a miscarriage, but in halacha we use the same term for a non-viable baby is called a nephil. So whether the baby comes out when the woman's been pregnant for 2 months, or whether the baby comes out and after seemingly a full-term pregnancy and dies, rachmana litzlan, within the first 30 days, so we consider that really the baby was never viable, and it's basically just considered in halacha you call it, again, a miscarriage, but you wouldn't, that's not the correct English terminology, you call it neonatal death or something, but it's all in the same halachic category as a miscarriage. So if the baby was never viable, so then it would be called a nephil, even if it was born alive. Seemingly, yeah.
Quick question about this. I guess you don't say Kaddish for a baby that dies.
Correct. So
is that still true now? Is this dependent upon the
So some say that when Chazal say that a baby that it lived for less than 30 days is a nephil, that was because they were going with the medical knowledge that was observed, that was thought of at the time, that certain babies were born in the 8th month of pregnancy. Again, the medical thinking in the times of Chazal was that some viable babies are born with a gestational period of 7 months, and some babies are born with a gestational period of 9 months. You could have a baby born after 7, born after 9, both good. They both survive generally. But a baby that was born after 8 months of pregnancy would not live. So that's, this is not the current state of medical knowledge, obviously, but that's why So it wasn't always clear when a baby was born that maybe it was an eighth-month baby and never destined to survive. So how can you be sure that it was an eighth-month baby, that it was not an eighth-month baby when the baby lived for 30 days? So then you're sure already that it was definitely not an eighth-month baby. So that's a question. So if you see nowadays that a baby is fully formed and it has, it looks like any other newborn baby, it's clearly had a full gestation and there's no reason to assume that it's any less viable than any other baby. So perhaps nowadays we should consider the baby a full person, basically, to the extent that you have to sit shiva potentially, even if it was born, if it died on the day it was born. Again, very sad situation, but there is a concept of volunteering shiva, that if you feel very emotionally driven to do so, even if it's not technically halachically required, there is room to volunteer the observances of shiva if it so moves you. Again, not lakula. So, for example, in a real shiva that's halachically mandated, so you're not allowed to learn Torah for 7 days. So if you're just volunteering shiva, then that does not exempt you from learning Torah for the period of shiva. You're still required. And they would not, of course, in a period of aninus, that when preceding shiva, before the body is buried, so the mourners are in a state of aninus, that they don't have to perform mitzvot, they don't have to daven, they don't have to make brachas, all these things. So again, you would not be entitled to those leniencies if you were merely volunteering to perform these duties rather than having them technically halachically required.
You're not volunteering to do this for extra, quote, from points, which is an expression I know I hate. You're doing it because it just seems like it's the thing to do. You need to do it. The kid was 27 days old. You got
fine.
To
know it. Okay. Well, whatever reason you're volunteering for, it still does not make it a fully halachically mandated thing that would exempt you from requirements that you would otherwise have to do. The same thing if you're sitting shiva. For some people want to volunteer shiva, for example, for a step-parent. Let's say you were raised by a step-parent and the natural parent died when you were one. You don't even remember. Yeah. Remember that parent, and you have a very parental connection with a step-parent. So then it is possible to volunteer. Again, it would not be halachically mandated, so you wouldn't get the leniencies, but it's possible to volunteer to observe shiva. So then the question comes, so maybe if the baby is born and you see that it's a full gestational period, so maybe you should do the pidyon haben on the first day that the baby is born. So no, they said, even though if it follows the pattern of the what's otherwise recognized in halacha, that a baby is not considered viable until 30 days, until it's 30 days old. Nevertheless, here there is a technical halacha that prevents you. It says in the pasuk, "Uptuyav mi ben chodesh tifdeh." It says in the pasuk that it has to be a month old before you perform the pidyon haben. Shneimar uptuyav mi ben chodesh tifdeh. So again, so how do you calculate this? So the first day that the baby is born counts as day number one, even though it's not a complete day. Again, the baby could be born 2 minutes before Shkia. That would be considered day number one. Then you count 29 more full complete days for a total of 30 days. Again, the first day being a partial day, but not the last day. And then on the 31st day, again, including the day of birth, that's when you perform the pidyon haben. You're not supposed to delay it past the 31st day of the child's life. There is another shita, actually, that the month that's referred to here is the lunar cycle. How long is the lunar cycle?
29 or 30 days.
No, but there's... it's 29 or 30 because you can't have partial days in a month. But the moon, the lunar cycle is always the same. It's 29 point... I forget the exact figure. 29 days and a certain number of chalokim and a certain... Whatever, 29 plus days. So the question... So according to some shitas, the pidyon haben should not be performed until after this amount of time has elapsed since the baby was born. That's considered the full lunar cycle. It doesn't have to correspond to the natural cycle of the moon, but to the time that it corresponds to the lunar cycle. So sometimes if a baby is born late in the afternoon, and you say you want to do a pidyon haben on the night of the 31st day, so sometimes the full lunar cycle time has not yet elapsed. So again, this is strictly speaking, we don't pass like that, but that might be the part of the reason why we generally do not do a pidyon haben at night, is the Ashkenazi minhag. So the question is why? It doesn't say anywhere in halacha that you can't do a pidyon haben at night. So, so that's why Sfardim do pidyon haben at night. And they say 30 days have passed. It's now the 31st day. It's nighttime now. Let's do it as soon as possible. But the general Ashkenazi minhag is that you do it the following day, which is, again, a little bit questionable. Why should you delay it? More than necessary. But some say it's because of this issue that it's, you should make sure that a full lunar cycle has passed. And sometimes it might be necessary to wait until later in the day, on the 31st day, for it to make sure a full lunar cycle has passed, maybe after midday. But in any event, so that's the general Ashkenazi minhag. But even among Ashkenazim, if there is a reason to do so, so we'll allow a pidyon haben to be done at night. So let's say the pidyon haben falls on Friday, which is an inconvenient time for many people. So people sometimes in such a situation will perform the pidyon haben at nighttime. Fine. Umitzvah zo muteles al ho'av. This mitzvah is incumbent on the father. The mother is not obligated to perform the pidyon haben, even though it's based on her or body that the pidyon haben is required or not required. Nevertheless, she is not obligated, since a girl is not obligated. Gemara in Kiddushin says that since a girl is not obligated to be redeemed, so therefore females don't have any
connection
to the mitzvah of pidyon haben. So therefore, it has to be the father. Again, it could be the father's not a bechor, but even so, since he's a male, so he's the one who's obligated to perform the pidyon haben. Avar ha'av velo ratzel ifdoso. If the father says it's too much and I can't afford that much money, not that much money, the truth, we'll get into that a little bit later, but he says, I'm not interested in performing the pidyon haben. Mitzvah ha'ben liftos atzmo mishayagdil. After the bar mitzvah, the child himself should perform the pidyon haben on himself. Again, you look in the Kabbalistic Svarim, you know, it says really bad things about a Bechor who has not yet been redeemed, all the, you know, the Ruchas Hatuma and all the terrible things that are attached to this person before the scary things. So that's why you should try to make to do the Pidyon HaBen as soon as possible, but in the event that that doesn't happen, so then the person himself has to perform the Pidyon HaBen. Yeah.
I remember many years ago, I think it was actually at a Pidyon HaBen, as a young, not so young man there, who realized that, having been brought up in more of a reform background and coming from them, oh my gosh, I never had a pinyon of Ben. And he ran around and found a Kohen and did it.
Yeah, he got to run to do it right away.
What case of intermarriage? Mother is Jewish, father is not.
So required to have a pinyon of Ben. Yeah, father? He has to. If the father is not Jewish and the mother is Jewish,
father,
so if
be involved. Yeah,
the father is obligated, not obligated to do the pinyon of Ben, and not obligated in any mitzvah. But the child himself, again, would have to, when he grows up, would have to perform the pidyon haben on himself. Again, if his mother is a Levi, so then he's exempt. We pointed out last time that if a mother is a Kohen and the father is a non-Jew, so then he's required, right? He's required to have a pidyon haben because by having relations with the non-Jew, she's desecrated her Kohen status.
Oh, right.
So now she's a regular Jewish woman, and her child will have to have a pidyon haben. Veha pidyon hu bein bekesef hashove chomesh saloim bein beshove kesef min mataltalin shegufan mamon. So the amount, it says in the Torah that the amount is 5 sloims. How much is 5 sloims? So the Rishonim give as the weight of 1,900 barley kernels. So what's the weight of 1,900 barley kernels? Of silver. What's the weight? It's about, so some say 86 grams, I think. Some say 90, some say 100. The biggest shear is like 115 grams or something like that. 115 grams of silver. So something that's the equivalent value to 115 grams of silver, which is like, I think, 4 ounces. Something approximately. It's not so much. Really not so much. So we're talking in contemporary money. I don't know, like $50, something like that. It's not... maybe silver went up since I last researched this, but it's really not a terribly large amount of money. So either that weight of silver or something worth that weight of silver can be used for pidyon haben. So the normal custom is to use 5 old silver dollars that were really silver. So in the Sefer, Pidyon HaBen Kihilchoso, which is the most comprehensive Sefer about the laws of Pidyon HaBen, he has a whole essay where he screams about this, and he says, This is ridiculous. Five silver dollars is much more than 100 grams of silver. Four of those coins is more than enough. Why do people use five silver dollars?
Because
the number five. It says in the Chumash you should use five sloim. So they got the number five in their head, so they use five silver dollars. He screams about this. He says it's totally unnecessary, and four silver dollars is more than enough. And the problem is, if the father thinks that this is necessary to give this much money, and the Kohen takes it, so that's gezel. It's stealing. He says you take more money than you're entitled to. He says really four silver dollars is plenty. Again, a certain type of silver dollar that has a certain weight of silver. So there are also coins that are made in Israel that are specifically designed for Pidyon HaBen that are not legal tender. They're just five coins. You get the number five. Again, there's no Indian to have a number five. You don't have to give the Kohen five things. If you give the Kohen an iPhone, it's also good for Pidyon HaBen. It's worth that amount of money. So but you get this idea in your head that it has to be five things. So people give five of these special coins that are made with the correct weight for Pidyon HaBen. So some people, in terms of the silver dollars, there was a slight objection that some people have raised, which is that there is a contradiction between their intrinsic value and the value that's stated on the face of the coin.
Coin code.
It says if you go to a store and you want to pay with these coins, so it's going to be $1 each. But if you go to a collector or someone who's interested in the silver, they're going to be way more than $1 each.
Right.
So some people say that might be a little bit of a shiloh, that the Kohen thinks it might only be worth $5. But it's worth a lot more than $5, so that's why some people recommend the special Pidyon HaBen coins, which are not legal tender.
What you used.
Oh, no. I used different. I used the bar of silver bullion.
Oh, really?
How big?
It's small, yeah, a 5 ounce. I couldn't find one that was the exact size, so I got a 5 ounce bar. So I said to the Kohen, I know 5 ounces of silver is a little more than necessary, but I'm giving it to you as a matana gemura. It's not gezel. It's not. It's not a problem. So you just use that. That's the easiest. And somebody else followed my lead afterwards. One of my friends also used that. No, I bought two. Because I wanted one to be, I wanted to keep one as a memento, but I didn't want, we'll get there one second about the Matana Manas Achzer, but I didn't want to get involved in all these things. I wanted the Kohen to feel completely entitled to take the amount for Pidyon HaBen. So anyway, so technically it appears you don't actually need five silver dollars, but some people like the special Pidyon HaBen coins or another object in any event. Apparently, Rav Schechter, I heard, was once at a Pidyon HaBen, and he saw the coins they're about to use, and it wasn't the right coin. So he said, this isn't enough money for the Pidyon HaBen. I think it was in Brooklyn. So they ran down the street to a silver store and bought a silver becher, and they gave the coin a becher. Like, it doesn't have to be made of silver at all. It just has to be tied into the value of a weight of silver. Right.
I think the Syrians, it's a big thing, Syrian Jews with the coins, considered a special school.
I don't know. Not familiar. But a lot of
details.
So since these coins are not so popular, and they're not used really anymore, and so they're hard to come by, the traditional coins for Pidyon HaBen. Oh, so by the way, so I asked Rabbi Willig. You know, I showed him the bar of silver bullion before the Pidyon HaBen. I said, you know, I'm planning to use this. I don't see any halachic problem with this, but like,
just in case,
I'm showing it to you just to make sure I'm. He says, yeah, it's fine, but, you know, who's the Kohen? So I told him that the Kohen was, you know, one of my friends, you know, someone my age. So no problem. I said, so what were you concerned about? He says, sometimes if you're going to get a Kohen who's 90 years old and he's been doing Pidyon HaBen for 70 years, and he's used to always getting the five coins because he has the number five in his head, he's going to say, what is this? I want my five coins. I don't want this bar of bullion. It says as long as you're not using a coin like that, so then so for sure it's no problem to use that. And again, might be even better than the coins because of the issue with the face value. Mm-hmm. So you can't use Yatsu Avodim Vekarkos Ushtaroshim Pedahu Bohen Eino Padui. So if it's something that's not intrinsically valuable, like slaves or land or a document. So that is not good for Pidyon HaBen. It has to be an object. It can't be land. It can't be a slave. So you cannot use a check for Pidyon HaBen because a check is a shtar.
Or paper money.
Right. Paper money, yes. Paper money, there are some shittas that would be allowed, but yeah, according to the majority of shittas, you would not be allowed to use paper money either, yeah.
Because it's not a shtar anymore. It used to be a shtar where you have to go to
the now market. It has intrinsic value because you can't exchange it for gold. Yeah, some people say that. But again, that's not we would not normally use that for pidyon amen. So, chamesh sloim shel pidyon. Ha'av yachol litnam lekoin echad o lekohanim harbe. You could give it to one kohen or to many kohanim. Doesn't have to be to one person. You could say, here's one sella for you, one sella for you, one sella for you, one sella for you. That's all good. Obviously, that's not the normal practice.
Didn't the Gra actually do pidyon haben with like a dozen different kohanim or something like that?
At least. So you have the shaila. So who's really a kohen nowadays? How do you know for sure who's really a kohen?
We accept people who are identify them as themselves.
Oh, so that's the normative shita, yes, of course. That people who... So Kohanim nowadays are what's called Kohani Chazoka, that we assume that they're Kohanim, but in order to, for example, worship in the Beis HaMikdash, you need to have a Kohen Meyuchas. You need to have someone who can document his lineage.
Syrians.
So you have some people who can. Okay, that's what one of Eliyahu HaNavi's jobs. Again, maybe if you don't have a Kohen Meyuchas, you could use a Kohen Chazoka. Okay, whatever it is, but the... So we assume that the Kohanim nowadays are really Kohanim, and you could perform Pidyon HaBen with any Kohen who is not a cholol and is identified as a kohen. But you have people throughout history who have not been satisfied with this, and they wanted to make 100% sure, as much as possible, that the person with whom they're doing the pidyon haben is really a kohen. So famously, the Vilna Gaon, whenever he would meet a kohen, he would whip out 5 slime and give it to the Kohen, because maybe this guy is a Kohen, and his first pidyon was not good. So he used to do this all the time until he met a Kohen who was from the Rappaport family. Oh. So apparently the Rappaport family are the most meyuchas type of Kohanim. So he said, well, if this isn't it, then I'm never going to get it. So after he gave his pidyon to a Rappaport, then he stopped me giving the pidyon haben to every kohen that he met. And some say, even Weiter, they say like this. They said, since we don't know for sure that people nowadays are who say profess to be a kohen or a levi are absolutely really a kohen or a levi, maybe even a kohen or levi should be machmer to make a pidyon haben without a bracha.
Oh my God.
So that other poskim, I think the Yaivet says like that, Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So other poskim scream at that. They say, no, that's, there may be what to be said for that svara, but lemaisa will make a huge kilkul that people are not going to respect the Kohanim and the Levium properly. Uh-huh. That they're going to think there's some doubt as to whether this person is a Kohen or Levi, and that's no good. So that's why, certainly, the normative practice is that people who identify as Kohanim and Levium absolutely do not perform a Pidyon HaBen on themselves.
Wait, should we look for a Rappaport, though, in particular? Is that
I don't know. Who says the Rappaport?
Also, the names, right. Rappaport may... Just like Horowitz, apparently Jews were not, Levium, took down the name Horowitz for various reasons.
Well, how does Horowitz...
Even cats, also.
How does Horowitz get...
Rabbi Cohen from
Lincoln
Square.
Yes, exactly.
So that's why the normative practice is you just if you find someone who claims to have a better yichus and has some sort of documentation, so maybe that's better. I think Rabbi Ben Sion Abba Shol was makbid to use a Yemenite kohen because he felt that the Yemenite kohanim had the strongest yichus. I would have used my friend the Yemenite Kohen, but he moved to Israel before my opinion of men, so I couldn't use my friend the Yemenite Kohen. So I had to use another different friend who was happened to be a Kohen.
I think Syrian Jews also
mentioned
that they only marry Kohen women from Kohen family.
Could be.
Going back to the second Beis HaMikdash.
But on the other hand, so bring me now a more meyuchas Kohen than the one I used for the pidyon haben. So you can make the argument that I did my job already.
That's right.
If he wants to be machmir, if Sachi wants to be machmir when he grows up to be pidyon haben again with someone else, that's his business. He uses his money. Why should I have to pay for that? That's one thing. So that's why the Vilna Gaon, again, it was himself. He didn't ask his father to do pidyon. Right. Maybe that it was that, or I don't know. But he gave his own money for the pidyon haben. He didn't ask his father to do the pidyon haben. The achi of litno lekohen zachar velo lekohenes. You have to give it to a male kohen, not a female kohen. The Aaron uvanav kesiv bechesa pidyon bechor. It says Aaron and his sons. The imratza hakohen, as opposed to truma, for example, which you could give to a female kohen. Again, was not married to a not married to a non kohen, right? The imratza hakohen lahachzir lo apidyon achar she nisanu lo yatsa yidei chova. There's no problem. The kohen is allowed to give the money back to the father. No problem, as long as he got the money. So that's completely fine. And some say, actually, again, that since Kohanim nowadays are not 100% sure they're Kohanim, then the Kohen should give the money back.
Well, Kohen who didn't give the money back would be very unpopular as a...
Exactly. So that's another reason. So some say... there are two different opposing shitas. Some say the Kohen Davka should give the money back because maybe he's not really, really a Kohen and he's really stealing this money. It's a gezel. Some say the Kohen should not give the money back because maybe there's a poor Kohen who really needs the money and there becomes a societal expectation that the Kohen gives the money back.
Yes.
Then they create an unfair expectation when the Kohen really needs the money and wants to keep it.
How do we hold nowadays? Do they give it back?
Well,
is that the expectation?
The problem is when you have these Kohanim who have their own coins that they give to the father, and the father gives that's okay because then he's giving it as a matana to the father, and the father is giving it back to the coins. That shouldn't really be a problem. Yeah.
Coin that I used anyway, he had his own $5 silver. Yeah.
Right.
So
you have to ask for one back. You give too much. Hmm? $5 silver. Okay.
So is the expectation if you give
Is
that the expectation today?
They give five? You don't have to give five. No, there's no requirement.
The expectation that the coin gives it back.
Well, if it was originally the Cohen's coins, then no, the Cohen's not giving it back to the father. But if the father comes up with his own 5 coins, so sometimes he wants to keep it as a memento. Oh, these are the 5 coins for my Pidyon Ben. What? It's not a memento. It's a present for the Kohen. What do you mean you keep a memento from your Pidyon Ben?
Yeah.
The whole point is to give it to the Kohen, not that, So that's why I bought two. I bought 2 silver bullions. One to show people, this is what I use, because I thought it was halachically interesting that we use this, but I didn't want to give it to the Kohen. The one of them, I just gave to the Kohen. I said, I don't care if you're... I mean, I hope you're really a Kohen. If you're not really a Kohen, I don't care. If it's too much, I don't care. I'm giving this bar to you as an absolute matana. Keep it, do whatever you want with it, etc.
But is the expectation that they give it back?
Oh, I'll get there. One second. Yeah, 1 second. We'll get there.
Uvilvad
shelo yidnenuhu lo al menaskein. The father cannot give the money to the Kohen with the expectation that it be returned.
Okay.
The father has to give it to the Kohen as an absolute matana.
Okay.
But if you say explicitly, I'm giving this to you as a gift with the condition that you return it to me, that's okay. Because there it's an explicit condition in the matana. And it's not like an expectation that's not stated explicitly. Yeah,
well, it's not a present.
Then you should. The ideal situation would be if the coin belonged to the Kohen.
Yeah,
and he gives it to the father, and then the father is not going to be it's not going to have any conditions in mind, but gives it back.
Yeah, or do what I did. I bought my bar of silver bullion, and I gave it as an absolute matana. I didn't want it back. But here, if you give it as a matana manas lachzer explicitly, then it's okay. The problem is only if it was not stated explicitly that it's a matana manas lachzer, and yet the father has an expectation that the money be returned. So this was a problem in many, maybe it's still a problem today. But in many Jewish communities, the minag was that they... gave it as a matana without any conditions, but then the father sort of expected that the money should be returned. So some say this is one of the reasons that the Vilna Gaon did Pidyon HaBen again. And he didn't rely on his father's Pidyon HaBen, is because his father did this. He gave the money to the Kohen without making any explicit stipulations, and then he expected that the Kohen return the money. So the Vilna Gaon was not happy with that, and he wanted to give it as an absolute matana. So you just have to keep it in mind that you should not have any expectation that the Kohen return the money, otherwise it could potentially be a serious problem. That's why I say, well, who needs to get it? Give the Kohen a nice present. Big deal. So you usually once in a lifetime it's although not always, you can afford to give the Kohen a $50, $100, however much this bar of bullion or coins costs, but it is important to keep in mind that you have to give it as either an absolute matana without any expectations or state the stipulation explicitly. So that's why it is super ridiculous to have this, to buy a commemorative set of Pidyon HaBen coins, because there it's obvious that the expectation is that that we want the coins to be returned, but
it
really doesn't make sense.
So expect them to be returned.
Well,
okay, so you don't expect it to be returned, but not everybody was as firm as you, so they wanted to give the...
Coin would buy those coins and use them for Pidyon HaBen. That's probably what the idea is.
No, but there's some people, some fathers, who buy a commemorative set of coins themselves, and then they give it to the Kohen, and they expect that the Kohen return it.
Why should they expect it?
Because they want to keep them, they want to have up with their mantelpiece or something.
The point
right.
is to give it to the Kohen.
Exactly.
No, the point of the lot of these things is to have a Pidyon HaBen and to have a suda and have your older friends over. I mean, that's a popular.
Right. So the suda of a Pidyon HaBen, yeah. It's interesting. In the Kabbalistic Sfarim, it says that eating at the Suda of a Pidyon HaBen is equivalent to fasting 84 fasts. So that's why when people are invited to a Pidyon HaBen, they really take the opportunity to go, because it's considered to be very religiously significant.
Does this let them off from 84 fasts?
I mean, how does that...
Pick a number out.
That's what it says in the Kabbalistic Sfarim.
Kabbalistic.
Well, it's claimed, by the way, that Rav Cutler, he spent some time as a Rav in Montreal, I think, or Quebec.
Byron Cutler was a Rav in Montreal.
He came across from Shanghai, I think it was, or something like that.
Through Canada?
I think it was Rav Cutler. The first thing he had to do was to decide the Pidyon HaBen. But the family's name was Horowitz or Siegel or something usually. So he's sort of delicately asked, "Are you sure that it's claimed?" They said, "Well, why not? His older brother had one."
Oy. Oy vey. Oy yay yay yay. Okay.
How does Horowitz come from Levy?
Because the Shla's last name was Horowitz and Shla was Levy, so a lot of people named Horowitz are descendants of the Shla. Yeah, a lot of people named Horowitz are descendants of the Shla.
Because they're descendants, but
including Rabbi Horowitz from YU. He's a descendant of the Shla.
Oh.
Ben Achar Ben from the Shla.
Really?
That's why he doesn't eat turkey.
Because
the Shla said, Shla held very strongly that turkeys are not kosher. He claimed that he saw one grab its prey and eat it, which is a sign of a non-kosher bird. So he wrote in his tzavah, he commanded all his descendants that whatever you do, do not eat turkey. So he said Rabbi Horowitz apparently has said that he has cousins who eat chazer, but turkey definitely not. Won't touch. They won't touch turkey. Okay.
People are funnier than anybody.